This is Morning Edition from NPR News. I'm Steve Inskeep. On Monday, the city of Memphis is hosting a nationwide simulcast of Elvis Presley's first hit song, That's All Right, recorded there on July 5th, 1954. It's being described as the 50th anniversary of rock and roll. But David C. Barnett of member station WCPN reports that the birthday party's a little late.
A nervous Elvis Presley stepped up to the microphone. Sun Records owner Sam Phillips pressed the record button on his Ampex tape deck and signaled the 19-year-old singer to start.
I love you because you understand it.
It was not an auspicious beginning. 15 seconds into the song, Presley stopped and tried again. Crooners were big on the pop charts that summer, so Elvis figured that was the way to get a hit record.
I love you.
But something wasn't clicking. Guitarist Scotty Moore and bass player Bill Black were getting frustrated by the lack of inspiration. Moore says they were getting tired, too.
We played probably a couple of hours, and Bill and I were getting ready to go home because both of us all had to work the next day. And Elvis just started playing guitar and just beating it practically and singing, That's All Right.
It's an historic moment that's been recounted ad nauseum. Elvis was just goofing around, singing an old song he loved by bluesman Arthur Crudup. Moore and Black joined in, and Sam Phillips got it on tape.
Well, that's all right, Mama. That's all right for you. That's all right, Mama. Just any way you do it, that's all right.
While some have called it the first rock and roll recording, the truth is, by 1954, there were already plenty of examples of what's referred to today as rock and roll. A year earlier, you had Rock, Rock, Rock by Amos Milburn. In 1952, there was Rock Me All Night Long by the Ravens. And in 1948, Wynonie Harris proclaimed,
I heard the news, there's good rocking tonight.
In fact, references to rocking and rolling go back much earlier, virtually all of them not too subtle allusions to sex. Blues singer Trixie Smith had a 1922 hit with My Daddy Rocks Me with One Steady Roll. And even the ultra-respectable Boswell sisters scored in 1930 with a tune called Rock and Roll, which was actually about a boat.
Rock and roll, yeah. Rock and roll, and rock away.
Even at Sun Studios in 1954, rock and roll was nothing new, according to Craig Warner, a professor of Afro-American studies at the University of Wisconsin.
If you want to just talk about that studio in Memphis, Ike Turner had already opened up that pathway musically.
3 years before Elvis recorded That's All Right, Ike Turner brought a band to Sun, featuring his cousin singing lead. Rocket 88 by Jackie Brenston and his Delta Cats is also sometimes called the first rock and roll record.
You women have heard of jalopies, you've heard the noise they make, but let me introduce my new Rocket 88. Yes, it's straight, just one way. Everybody likes my Rocket 88. Baby, we'll ride in style, moving all along.
Ever since sound was first scratched into wax, white audiences have been drawn to black music. And while white musicians liked Rocket 88, Memphis writer Robert Gordon says they couldn't quite find the groove.
The point is that white people couldn't play Rocket 88. They can play a version of it. They can try. And it's that trying, that creating something new, that would be what is rock and roll.
Memphis musician and record producer Jim Dickinson is even more specific.
It has to do with how you handle the eighth note, you know.
Rock and roll basically follows a four-beat structure, 1, 2, 3, 4, which can be divided into eighth notes, the and in 1 and 2 and 3 and 4. Dickinson says the feeling is in those ands.
Well, now that's all right, now, Mama. That's all right for you. That's all right, now, Mama. Any way you do, but that's all right. That's all right. That's all right, now, Mama. Any way you do.
The
it is a racial thing because white musicians play eighth note shuffle one way and black musicians play it another way. And I don't care if that is politically incorrect, it's the truth. And somewhere in between those two, there's a tension that's rock and roll.
That's all right. That's all right, mama, anyway, do.
Craig Warner says Dickinson is onto something, but he thinks the difference in styles doesn't have to do with skin color.
I think it's about the communities we grow up in, who we talk to, who passes down the sounds that feel natural to us. Obviously, there are a lot of white musicians who can learn something about that black feel.
Elvis Presley learned a lot of that feel from a popular Memphis disc jockey, who Jim Dickinson says was a crucial ingredient in Elvis's recipe for rock and roll.
The idea that Elvis had of doing black music in this hillbilly way came right off of Dewey Phillips' radio show.
Talk to me, little Willie John. Right now, I got Peter Pan's Ports of Red Hot Blues brought to you through the curse of best meat products from Limbaugh. Good old Starlin, Starlin, darling. I always remember by good old Starlin. Right now, it's old Phillips bringing your Red Hot Blue coming through WHBQ and Hotel Tisca.
Dewey Phillips ruled the Memphis airwaves from 1949 into the 1960s with a show that mixed everything. He'd follow a country song with a blues tune, followed by bluegrass, followed by gospel.
We've been playing the last four or five nights, and we've been having a lot of requests for it. It is Sister Rosetta Thorne.
I want to tell you the natural facts. That a man don't understand that Bible right, and that's all.
This gospel shouter was playing Chuck Berry riffs in the 1930s and 40s. Maybe she's the first rock and roller.
Rosetta Tharpe is one of the great unsung heroes of the whole story.
Music scholar Craig Warner.
She could put jazz licks in. She could make gospel standard really swing, really rock.
But the real story is much bigger than Tharpe or Presley or any other single record.
In the 50s, with the return of black veterans from World War II, the rising energy of the freedom movement, Brown versus Board of Education, I think people are starting to say, hey, all of these niches that looked like they were separate before don't have to be separate. Rosetta Tharpe already knew that. A lot of individuals already knew that. The music business was just starting to catch on.
In that light, maybe there's no point in figuring out who made the first rock and roll record.
The point isn't figuring it out. The point is trying to figure it out.
Steve Propes and co-author Jim Dawson tried to figure it out in their book, appropriately titled, What Was the First Rock and Roll Record? They identified 50 likely candidates, beginning with Blues Part 2, recorded by Jazz at the Philharmonic in 1944, and ending with Elvis Presley's Heartbreak Hotel in 1956. But Prope says the book doesn't come to any conclusions.
It's like a board game. You don't win at Monopoly and say, okay, well, I've done it. You continue doing it. You continue looking because that's the fun part of it. The search is what it's all about because you expose yourself to music you might never have heard.
And that's all right. For NPR News, I'm David C. Barnett.
Dee, 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 now that's all right.